Welcome to the Developing Your Football World podcast. We've got a big one here for you today. BSCN founder Matt Ward returns to the podcast and is accompanied by David Weber. The two talk to us about what is happening in China. The country is opening up and there will be lots of opportunities for coaches. We're going to talk about life in football and how to get a job in this football-mad country. Matt, David, thank you for coming on. Start with you, Matt. How are you doing today?
All good, mate. It's all nice and calm in Taiwan at the moment. No missiles or rockets being launched, which is kind of past. And any other stories what the media is putting out there to try and take the onus off their own countries. But anyway, sorry, that's not started off on the right track, has it? But I'm all good, thanks, Will. And thanks for inviting me on for a chat. And good to catch up again, especially all the work you're continuing to do with the British Football Coaches Network as well. So, yeah, looking forward to the chat, mate.
Thank you. A lot of people give me some credit, and I didn't. This is Matt. This is your baby, and I'm just continuing.
No, take it, mate. Take it. Take the credit.
I don't get much, so maybe I should. David, how are you doing? Where are you exactly?
Yeah, so I'm in Beijing. So we've just come past Chinese New Year, so I was able to have a nice week off. Somewhere slightly warmer in the south of China. It's a little bit cold in Beijing now, but. It's called Spring Festival for a reason, so the weather's turned. It's a little bit warmer now, but the kids are still waiting to go back to school. So it's camp time. So getting the kids twice a day, doing a lot of football, so it's keeping me nice and busy.
Now, did you say that you are outside or across from the Chinese, is it Soccer Association?
Yeah, I'm just across the road from the Chinese Football Association. So, if anyone tunes in, then you can bring me across there anytime you want, and I'll take a job for the national team's available at the moment. So, if they're looking for a head coach, I'm available.
So we're here to talk about China and opportunities that are either available or about to become available. One of the first big things that we've got to get out of the way is people are going to want to know, what's life like there now regarding COVID and the restrictions? And it's hard being this side of the world because, firstly, you don't really know what's coming out. You don't really trust entirely. You don't get the full picture. And plus, for a lot of people, having not, like myself, I've not been to China. So it's hard for me to actually conceptualize and picture a lot of this stuff that you read and that you see on the news. So from guys that have been there and from guys that are there, is life getting back to normal? What does normal look like?
Yeah, I would certainly say now it's a lot more normal than it was before. Last year, we were up to like daily testing to get to do any school stuff or, you know, even to go to the pitch. The education authorities were saying you should do that. So there was little COVID testing booths on every corner. And you'd pop down and you know, scan a QR code and test away. But a lot of them have been removed. A lot of people now are not wearing masks. So it's positive in that side. Everyone seems to have had COVID in January. So December or January. So we're now in a much better place, ready to move on, as the rest of the world already has, I think.
Yes, I think we may have put our fingers in our ears and pretended it was over a lot sooner than many other countries in the world did. But each country has got their own way of dealing with things, and China definitely had a very different way of dealing with it than many of us, good, bad, or indifferent. Those are the facts. It did go on for a long time. And I know, as someone that has been trying to arrange a honeymoon in Shanghai for the best part of 3 years now, I've been paying a bit of attention to a lot of the travel restrictions regarding work, tourism, all that kind of thing. So I believe China's now open for people to come in and work. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you can find a job. We're a little bit behind Taiwan. They've already kind of pretty much fully reopened. China's just reopened. So if you can get a job, then work permits are open, and then also business travel, which is how a lot of people kind of first get their foot into China. And dip into the jobs market because the doing the work permit from outside China is a little bit difficult. You can come in, meet people, see jobs, and then go from there. So that's a lot more positive.
From the way you guys were talking before, it sounded like you could just walk down the street and land yourself a handful of football jobs.
Yeah. Well, just adding what David said there. Sorry, Will, is my head coming on as speaker when I speak? Is it coming on the screen?
Yeah, we can see your beautiful head quite clearly.
Oh, yeah, I was worried then. That's good news for everyone. So as David was saying, look, it's difficult to obtain a work permit from outside of China. And it's difficult anyway, but one of the main reasons being is China's already got so many options of workers already in the country. And just like any other country, and just like I always bang on about, it is easier to get a job when you're in the country where you want to get a job in. And if the employer has got someone who can do the job already there, can start tomorrow if needed, can interview tomorrow, can demo tomorrow, why are they going to bother with the hassle flying someone over who's never been in Asia before or the country before, only to lose them next week? It's not worth the risk. And when it comes to football coaching, there's David knows more of the current state now, even with COVID, where I would say thousands of coaches left, there's still a surplus. There's hungry Spanish coaches, of course, with all pro license qualifications, the Serbians, there's thousands of them there looking for jobs, getting jobs, some of them around pro clubs, private academies. And this is what you're competing against if you want to try and apply for a job in China from overseas in your home country. And as David said as well, look, people use business visas to get in there. The main thing is just to get there. Okay. Once you get there, anything can happen. Let me say allegedly, just to cut my own back. But things happen allegedly. And the main thing is getting there, because if somebody wants something to happen, it can allegedly happen. So that's why if someone's in the right situation where they can literally just pack a bag and go for a little holiday, maybe an extended one, maybe like yourself, Will, when you get around to it, then that would be the thing to do. Get across there first, and then you will see for yourself how easy it is to network and socialize and then get yourself into a job. Like you said, you could be walking down the street and someone might say, as you said it, someone might say, oh, yeah, what are you doing here? Oh, yeah, well, I'm actually a football coach, but I'm looking for a teaching or coaching job. Oh, I know a school around the corner. It happens. You might be in a bar or a coffee shop, whatever your tipple is. And you get talking to someone, oh, my kid goes to this school. Oh, they're looking for a foreigner. And that's how it works normally.
So what would you
especially say? Especially at the moment, because there is coaches in China, they're the ones who are getting the first shout. And people are a little bit nervous about taking people who aren't in China because they don't know what they're getting. Someone who's in China, they know what they want. So if you already are in China, even if you're not here with a job, then you know you can start next week because that's how many jobs there are available, right? then they're gonna take you on over someone who they're going, okay, well, it might take a month to get the work permit sorted for them if we can get it while they're abroad. Then some people are gonna want to skip that step if it's at all possible to do.
So I'm trying to put myself in the mind of someone who maybe hasn't traveled as much. And I always think of one of my best mates, his sister many years ago had a boyfriend who got a job in Dubai, and he spent one night in a hotel, flew back the next day, didn't even leave. He somehow landed in 40 degree heat and got cold feet and decided it wasn't for him. And so I think for a lot of people that haven't traveled, that haven't gone outside that comfort zone, or because a lot of countries are similar, some countries are quite different, but I think a lot of the differences are superficial. It's language and it's food, and maybe there's a few customs. So, but in people's minds, I think this plays a big, big part. They speak Chinese over there, and they've got all those funny letters. How am I going to cope? And they eat rice, everything. No, it's a multicultural country where you're going to be able to find a lot of your modern comforts from back home. You're going to find a lot of people who speak English, and just because you might not speak the language doesn't mean you're going to suffer. So I really, really get the point of being there in the first place proves that you're not going to chicken out and fly home straight away. We had a guy in Mexico, landed on the Friday, flew home on the Monday, just went, no, I can't do this. And yeah, it is a big risk to employers if you're having to pay for a visa and pay for flights and then maybe a couple months of rent as well, if that's part of the contract, and then someone just bails on you. So how does a coach get to China in the first place?
So like,
you go, David.
It would depends if they've already got something sorted. If you've got something sorted, then obviously your company will take you through all the steps. If you haven't got something sorted, then it's going to have to be the business visa at the moment, because the tourist visa isn't available. So it's about finding a way that you can get issued one of these letters. So all you need is an expression of interest from someone in China to write a letter for you that says you know, we want you to come and to visit China for some business purpose. It could be to come and help actually with a football project. You might have an original contact. It might be because you speak to an agent, it could help you get an education job. Then they can issue a letter that will allow you then to come into the country. It could be you make up the need for some business trip or to attend some conference, and these are all sort of ways that you can then get that business visa, which will have you in, and hopefully the tourist visa is not too long, too far behind, and that honeymoon can be had not too long in the future.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. When I was general manager for one of the companies, I won't mention which one, but even people I weren't recruiting from overseas, people I knew and needed a letter for a business visa, I would just write that. I'd write one for them to say that they're coming to watch some classes or to volunteer for a little bit or have some meetings. And basically, that's their evidence. No one ever checked. I would even write my address, they use my address and whatnot in case it's followed through with the checkup. No one checks. They get their business visa and then they come across and then they get a full-time job in the country.
So clear this up for me then, because my understanding is that with the football market in China becoming a lot more competitive, it used to be most coaches are looking at a level two or a C license come out. But is it now the case they're looking for more B license coaches because there's a higher standard or criteria for foreign coaches coming in?
I think it depends a lot on the job. A lot of coaching is very basic coaching, very community coaching based. So if a company knows what it's actually looking for, then that level two, that C license level is the right level. You see some ones which are then applying higher criteria, but that's more to do with, oh, they want to show off that they've got a B license or an A license coach.
Yeah.
So you kind of like almost a warning sign. If you see a company saying we want you to coach primary school age kids and we want an A license, then that's probably not the job that you want to be taking. But for the proper professional jobs, then you need real experience. Matt obviously has worked in that environment and knows a lot more about that. But Chinese professional football is maybe a joke in terms of its performance, but no joke in terms of their off-pitch standards and expectations in terms of who they hire and what background you need. That's a different ball game. But you can find a job for anyone really when it comes to China, I feel.
That's really well put, David, because most academies just need a good level two or C license coach, maybe a B license coach, which are good with kids or youth. However, a lot of Asian countries are superficial, materialistic, China, especially when it comes to employing a foreign face. And they would rather have a pro license coach if the people running the academy or the organization just have no idea what they're doing, because it looks good. And then, like David said, they can boast and charge extra money privately or whatever. And David, am I right in saying they change the rules with visa requirements? Sometimes you can't officially be called a football coach unless now you're a B license or above, whereas it used to be level two.
Yeah, so like if you want to come as and work as a coach, there's two routes. One is to have a degree, and then you can come and be employed. If it's a sports degree, they can employ you as a coach. If it's not a sports degree, then that becomes an extra issue with the paperwork. But if you have a B license, then you can be employed officially as a football coach.
Okay, so what kind of jobs are available? Because to me, it sounds like it's similar to what you might be getting up to in the US, where it's a lot of camps, a lot of clinics, a lot of some work in schools and a lot of private academies and grassroots clubs. But I also know that the Chinese Super League is massive in terms of popularity and opportunity. So and some of the organizations and clubs that I've seen that are recruiting out there, it gives the impression that it is similar to yours. So what are the opportunities like? What's available for a coach who wants employment in China?
Truly a bit of everything, I think. There is the school coaching, which can be a range from, basic PE stuff and after school stuff only, through to, some schools are competing in the Chinese Youth Premier League. So they'll compete against the, U14, 15, 17 level against the professional academies. So those schools are training, five times a week almost a professional club with a school attached to it. And then you've got like the private academies, which again are a complete mix. You've got some which only focus on giving the kids a good time. My club now, to use the horrible word, elite, or the kids in the top band of the club, train three times a week and then play a match on the weekend. So that's relatively serious for kids which are in primary school. And then when you go up to the professional clubs, then the kids are pretty much full time as well. So that's going to be proper serious coaching. So if you're a coach which hasn't really started coaching and done that much coaching, like when I first came out here, it's great because you get a lot of hours on the pitch coaching kids which are keen but not necessarily with much ability. And then if you really know what you're doing, then you can get put in a job where you're working with some of the best players in China, or getting a lot of contact time with kids as well, in different settings, school or grassroots club.
The potential, the opportunities are there. It's a massive country. It's just endless. Like there's just corners of it in little caves where you could just go. Well, even in the bigger cities, you can go over to China and reinvent yourself. You can basically reinvent yourself and forge out your own career. Basically what I did in Asia. So you can go over there, you could be a school, teaching school kids. And then if you put the work in, if you do the right moves, talk to the right people, but also, you're good at what you're doing and you make a difference and you're not trying to change the way China does things, or you're not trying to change China, but you're trying to give positives to the players, to the children, and also some benefit and value to the to your employers as well, you can quickly move up. You can forge your own career to actually do anything. And what job you take when you first get there, it doesn't have to be that job for the next few years. You can basically make it whatever you want. I've been in a job there, and David, I know you've been the same. You're in a job, you're working, you're thinking, oh, I'm happy doing this. Then the next week, you might get four or five job offers and you've not even been looking for a job. They've just kind of come to you, which is very rare in, let's say, in England. And these job offers, I'll be honest with money now, just so people can get an idea of what we're talking about. So I was already in quite a nicely paid job where I was very comfortable, accommodation and allowances and everything. And then I got two of the job offers were over £4,000 a month after tax. Now, look, depending what your role is in England, okay, some people might scoff at that, or, oh, that won't feed my family or whatever. But you've got to remember, when you're in China, the cost of living is very reasonable for a foreigner, depending on their lifestyle. For me, I can live very, very well on let's say, £4,000, even £3,000 out there, because, you know, I don't like to go out to Western restaurants and bars every night. Okay, your disposable income becomes a lot larger. You can save. You can actually put yourself through coaching coaching licenses. You can buy things. You can start paying for a house or buying for a house back home. Okay, which is very common. And that wasn't just one or two. One of the offers was £5,500, but it was very inflexible, and I knew what I would be expecting, and I didn't really trust it a lot. And the other was 3.5. So all of them, really, I could have lived nicely, supported my family back in Taiwan, supported myself, and built something from there. But in the end, I was happy what I'm doing. I was like, sorry, guys, but I've got a job. And it's like, well, we'll give you petrol allowance as well. I said, no, it's not about the costing or anything. If you're happy doing something, you're happy. So this is what someone can create for themselves when you're out there, just like you can in other countries. But China is... Look, people go on about the UAE, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. It can be like Disneyland, but it's expensive. Same, Will, you've been to Singapore. Same with Singapore. Same with Hong Kong. Look, Philippines is different because of the cost of living compared to Singapore and Hong Kong. But China, you can create what you want out there. And you can become the coach or the educator or teacher or professional that you want. Okay, if you're willing to put the work in, you can do the job, what you're meant to, and you build your profile correctly, them opportunities can be for a lot of people, the ones what I just mentioned. And look, David's done well as well. He's worked through, he's worked with, let's say that word again, elite school teams and everything in the national team competitions, director of football, head of football. I sent a guy out, Declan, probably 4 years ago to China. Yeah, maybe 4 years ago, we stay in touch. He started working for a private academy, running around doing PE classes. He's just left one head of director of football role or director of PE. Now he's gone to another director of football role in an international school. Getting good dollar, house paid for, sending money back home, having a good lifestyle out there. And that's what could be available for people. But of course, I guess in a bit, we can talk about the negatives as well, because it's not all... rainbows and unicorns.
Right, we'll definitely get to some negatives as well. So let's just paint a scenario then. I'm an experienced coach, highly qualified, and I want to go to China, but I don't want to work with 4-year-olds and do after school clubs. I want to go work at Guangzhou Evergrande with their under 21s, so I want to work in the academy at Shanghai Shenhua. How do I get that job?
Well, like it was a month or so ago, the FCM put a job advert out, which was for the Chinese Football Association, looking for U10, U12 coaches. So, like, you know, some of these things are there on the market, right? The CFA's got a new project where they're trying to build these training bases in these different cities. So you go there, and who knows, you know, if after 1 or 2 years you do a good job coaching the, you know, city U12 teams in that particular base, then you're going to move on to somewhere better. Getting directly into the academies from abroad is a lot more difficult, because a lot of them have a head of academy who then knows the people he wants to bring in. But that again comes down to, you know, being on the ground and actually having the background that suits it. If you have worked in a good setting and you have the appropriate license, and then you can make the connection, then you can go and do it. A couple of guys that were working in Shanghai at different clubs during COVID have now gone to Shanghai Shenhua, which is, you know, the traditional Shanghai team, and they're working with the academies. So, you know, it's not a completely closed shop, but it's not advertised on indeed.com all the time. You've got to find those jobs, and the same as it is for any football. It's about who you kind of know, but it's about putting yourself in the place to know people or to be recommended.
Absolutely, mate. And the thing you got to remember, look, anyone listening to this might be thinking, right, so let's get this right. You're basically saying you've got to get over to China to be able to get a job first. Well, isn't that a risk to the coach? We talked about the risk for the employer of coaches coming and leaving after a week. And yeah, it's a risk for the coach. However, the risk is minimized by the fact that you have to be a total disaster not to get a job in China. If you are a foreigner and have some ability in doing something educational or coaching or teaching wise, you're not a disaster. It's very difficult not to get a job. So the worst case scenario, and I even say this to myself, look, I'm kind of semi-retired already, but I'm not playing golf yet. But if disaster hit me and I don't know, I lost everything, I would go and teach English. I would go and work in a school. I would go and be a sports teacher. I'll do something with kids. I'm in Taiwan, it's different, but in China, you can do it even easier. There are, I don't want to say a million, but there's probably a million schools. I don't know, but there's hundreds of thousands of schools in China. It's very, very, very difficult. I don't want to use the word impossible. Very difficult not to get a job. So if you can't get a coaching role, which also can be difficult if you're out there, you can fall back and you can have a job and you can pay your bills. You can survive until that right opportunity comes around. And of course, you can't just go over there not having anything. Oh, well, I got an F license from USSS or whatever it's called, USF F license from the States. Okay, maybe that isn't going to cut it. But if you go there, you know, knowing with a little bit of knowledge, hopefully from what we're talking about here, with something in your pocket, it's very difficult. And the worst case scenario is you can still survive. And when I say survive, you could be, after a payday of doing some kind of job out there at a school with kids, teaching, coaching, worst case scenario, you might have £600 a month disposable cash left over every month to get a ticket back home. So you would only have to work for a month before you can escape and pay for your own ticket back anyway. And you're probably better off than when you left your home country in the first place.
Matt just outed me there. Why I'm still in China after 8 years?
Davey's getting keep collecting them £600, mate. It all adds up.
The dodgy coach part, that was the.
We can start a GoFundMe if you're desperate, mate.
That's why I'm out here.
There's obviously a lot of people from the UK and Ireland that have gone over there and had success and that are still there after 8 years because they can't afford their £600 flight home. I'm guessing that only speaking English is not a barrier to having success in your career in China.
I think it's almost a marketing point sometimes in some settings. My current club now plays a lot on the creating the English environment. My previous club, when I was working in Zhengzhou, was similar about trying to have the foreign coach who is then talking to the kids in English. You know, you find that in most countries where English is not the first language, that learning English for the parents is quite important. And when you're in a country which focuses so much on education, that sport is seen as a distraction. If you can dual purpose it, then maybe more of the parents think, oh, it is worth playing football for a little bit longer rather than giving it up. But yeah, it depends on the environment. Chinese people almost don't expect you to speak Chinese. They're surprised if you can speak Chinese. They're like, oh, you do speak some Chinese. So, you know, turning up fresh off the boat, maybe the last few years is a bit different because there haven't been proper foreigners that are kind of coming over for a few days then going on the rest of their Asian tour. But yeah, before, people just turning up, tourists, foreigners that work here for a few years really struggle with Chinese. It doesn't stop them getting a job. It doesn't stop them being able to perform their job well because it's actually designed for people to be like that. And then they can have translators. They have situations where the kids are learning English or can already speak English. And then go from there.
And if you can speak Chinese, look, David's Chinese is much better than mine. His is very good. And if you can, if you went over, look, I started to sound like a used car salesman, and people think, why am I so excited? But literally, I'm so excited because I know the potential out there. I get excited about thinking about people going over there and finding a job and getting paid well and doing a full-time job they actually enjoy and not having many worries. Yes, you have to pay bills, but you know your electric bill, it might be £10 a month. Your gas bill might be £8 a month, £12 a month, £20 a month if it's cold, depending on which area you are. Okay, you can see all the Premier League games. You just scan a barcode and you pay £18 a year or £28 a year. You got all the Premier League games and Spanish on your TV. You can live a good life. So that's why I get excited, and. Again, just going back to what could happen. David said, look, it's a bonus. You speak in English. You're doing an English class. You're coaching in English. You might have a parent contact you after and say, hey, can you come and do some one-on-one training with my kid and teach them English at the same time? Oh, yeah, okay. I'll give you £30 an hour. Oh, okay. If it's a well-off family, I'll give you £50 an hour. Oh, okay. Same things happen in a lot of countries in Asia. You get in contact with these people. You become a known person, a known coach, a known face. You're working for your club, academy or whatever, but you're also doing one-on-ones with certain clients and families, and you're getting paid £30, £40, £50 an hour. And it's up to you how much you work in your spare time. And this is reality. This is absolute reality. Now, Will, as you said, oh, but I want to work in a professional environment, everything. If you go straight into a professional environment, even though it's very difficult, as David said, you might not last because you just don't know the way how China works. That's a reality. They do things very differently. You might not get paid on time. You might not get paid for 1 month, but then you'll get double and paid a bonus the next month. And, you know, a lot of people will come feeling like they're entitled to this and entitled from that. I've got a UEFA A. I'm from England, you know. No, well, that doesn't matter. And the Chinese don't care whatsoever. They've got a lot of money. They still have a lot of money. And that means they can do whatever they want. Going into one of the negatives, you don't know what's going to happen from day to day, from week to week. But that's kind of the excitement of a challenge. Not if you need a job and then you wake up, you go to work and you've lost a job or something happens or the academy closes or school closes. But the good thing is you can just go on to another job in China, which, as we just mentioned, is easily done or can be easily done. But yeah, there is a lot of uncertainty. You know, there is a lot of backstabbing. There are a lot of rules what are there on Monday and then they've gone on Tuesday. And that's something you have to navigate, but you've got to be the person which can accept that and know that before you go. I think they're the kind of negatives David and I should be truthful about. I mean, David can give you a little bit more what's going on right now today.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true in the professional scene. If anyone's following anything about the Chinese professional club scene, you can see the players not necessarily getting paid, clubs folding at the end of every season. A couple of my colleagues now, you know, I'm just coaching grassroots in Beijing, were formerly working in professional clubs at different levels in China. And they were just like, well, I can come here. I know what time I'm working. I know my games aren't going to get all moved because the government's put in a new COVID restriction. And at the end of the month, my salary is going to get paid.
You're getting paid at a grassroots club, but you're not getting paid at a pro club. It makes total sense. Yeah.
At least in the grassroots club, you know, you're earning your money. Cause if you're out on the pitch and you've got 10 kids, you know, those 10 kids are paying for the class, right? So there's money in the club. As the professional clubs are all running at a humongous loss, even at the times when they are able to sell tickets, because some of the clubs are just, you know, not particularly well supported, especially as you go down the leagues and some of these teams are, you know, created 2 years ago and they're suddenly playing professional football in the second tier or whatever. But now the COVID restrictions have gone, and the chance that you wake up one morning and you can't go to work for a month is taken away. There's certainly going to be a lot more stability on that, hopefully, for for all coaches at all levels, is yeah, particularly those professional guys, because they've had a pretty tough 12 months.
Let's talk a little bit about culture and geography, because as football coaches, typically people, I would say football coaches have a greater understanding of geography than the average person, because you learn so much through football, World Cups, Champions League, and you'll know that, for instance, Gabriel Ainsa speaks Welsh because a bunch of Welsh miners migrated to that specific village in Argentina. And there's a lot of people that can't even point to Argentina on a map, but football coaches know this kind of stuff. But let's just go over a couple of things then. So China's got a population of over a billion, but it's the fourth or fifth biggest country in the world by land, and yet it only has one time zone. And most of the people, 80-90% of the people, live very close to the coast on the east. So you've got a bit of everything there, haven't you? You've got mountains, you've got huge cities. I think something like 10 cities bigger than New York that people have never heard of, because China is massive in terms of population, which I think a massive population, very densely populated in some areas, probably goes some way to the amount of opportunities that you're able to get, because there's a lot of people in a very small area. Very, very well connected. Seen here in England, every few weeks we're complaining about the train prices, and every now and again you get that one meme on social media that's around about two university friends, I think, in Newcastle and London, both flew to Barcelona for a weekend because it was cheaper than taking the train to visit each other. And so from what I can see in China, it takes only a few hours to get from Shanghai to Beijing. It's cheap, it's regular, what, every 20 minutes or something, bollocks like that. And I want you to try and paint the picture from my rough estimations that I've done here, if you wouldn't mind. Try and paint the picture for coaches, what China's like geographically and culturally, and what might stand out, what might take some getting used to.
Well, so if you can get past the language barrier, which is obviously the first one, kind of each city has its own kind of feel to it, shall we say, and the cities that people will be most common with, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, which are those kind of mega cities. But even between those cities, you have a different feel. I spent 5 years in Beijing before going to Shanghai. I'm not a massive fan of Shanghai for that reason, because I'm more of a Beijing person, and it's a very different vibe. Matt's come to Beijing and doesn't like it. He's a Shanghai guy. So, even within those big cities, you've got vast differences. But, I was in Zhengzhou, which is a city more inland, a provincial capital, but not one that people would have heard of, 12 million people. As you said, one of these big cities people don't hear about. And then it has its own feel in terms of the way that life is, and these are all cities that are well connected. It's a completely different story if you end up in a much smaller city, or you end up further down in the south, maybe towards one of the other countries like Vietnam and Burma down there, because that is then a slightly different group of people. Ethnicity, most people in China are Han Chinese, but there are some other nationalities of people or ethnic groups of people, and they are slightly different in the way that they approach things. So yeah, completely different again in terms of how they live their life, especially with the time zone, as you mentioned. As I found out when I was down on holiday and the sun wasn't coming up till 8:30, and in Beijing it comes up at about 6:30. So yeah, it really is diverse, and people will find what they like. Some friends are living now in coastal cities after living in Beijing, and they say they would never go back to Beijing. So really is something for everyone, shall we say, in terms of each city, quite distinct because of the distances between them.
Up north, you're near Mongolia. You got Inner Mongolia, which is minus 34 right now, or a few weeks ago. Down south, yeah, it's getting hotter because look, China's just huge. You're in different, you should be in different countries and time zones. It's ridiculous. So you got minus 34, the Mongolians at top. down south, everyone, you might get some darker skin Chinese or kind of island hangout people. And then across the water, you've got like Hong Kong and Taiwan. So you're getting hotter and hotter, closer down to Vietnam, to Thailand, etc. To the east, to the west. To the west, you're basically almost kind of Turkmenistan, what are the other stands? Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, all of this area, mountainous and deserts. And then to the east, like you mentioned, Will, you got most of the main cities, which aren't too far away. Northeast, you've got Beijing and then Shanghai further down, Dalian. I like Dalian because it reminds me of Taiwan. It's a beautiful coastal city. So you could, whatever you like, you know, whatever environment you like living in, you can find it in China. Just go to that province. Now, David knows better, but provinces, you know, you don't talk about cities because there's too many. People just talk about provinces. Because within the province, there's just too many cities. So you could get lost in a province because you could just end up at a city. You could be the king coach of that city. No one's ever heard of you outside, but you're the main person in that city. And you're probably coaching the best school team or youth team or even part of the pro setup. Now, there's the key. If you want to get involved in the Super League with Beijing or Shanghai or whatever, very unlikely going to be happening unless you're very fortunate. Or you built that for yourself from China. However, there's nothing stopping you from building that reputation and prestige in one of these kind of unknown cities, what even Weber hasn't heard of. There's nothing stopping you. And depending what your kind of career goals, short-term, long-term goals are, you know, if it's to make money, you can make a lot of money. If you want to make a lot of money and try and retire, let's say you're 30, in 10 years' time, you could get close to doing that if you want to take the money and probably settle in the Philippines or Indonesia or Thailand and depending on lifestyle. If you want to send money home to the family, if you're able to leave dependents back home, you can do that also. If you want to go for career, yes, you can make your way up to the pro leagues. But now I will say, and Davey touched on it as well, the league's very poorly run now. China professional football has gone downhill since when I was there with Shanghai Shenzhen. And it was a bit of a roller coaster even then in 2016. But now pro players aren't getting paid. Teams are folding. Games are being cancelled. No one knows when the league's coming up. No one knows what's happening. And it wouldn't be a secure place to be in. However, if you wanted to become a technical director or head of an academy or a head coach of a youth setup, a private academy, a school, that would be the place because you can go into these serious international tournaments. China takes school tournaments very serious, even to the point where there's allegedly been some corruption going on. Well, it was in the news, in Chinese news. So allegedly there was corruption with U9 games, U10 games, money exchanging hands for referees to let certain school teams win. They take it serious. So if you get involved with a serious school team and you become head of football, head of academy, that is a good career pathway. And you can then go from wherever you want to. You can stay in Asia. Yes, look, people say, yeah, but you come back home and what can you do? Look, people have come back abroad and got a job back in England. It's just how you are as a person and a coach. If you go back and think you're going to go straight back into something, maybe not. If you're, while you're working in China, you're still keeping your contacts and friends and talking to people and helping people out, then you are always going to have a place to go to. But if you go out in China and then lose contact with everyone and 10 years you come back, you're probably not going to get into Newcastle United Academy as a U10 coach or something. So you've got to be realistic, but also you've got to know what you want and your expectations, both your short-term and long-term goals as well.
That networking's massive in China as well. Like, yeah. We talk about all these opportunities exist. Yeah, they do. But as we said earlier, they're not necessarily advertised. Just because we don't necessarily read Chinese or Chinese people, they want foreigners, but they don't know where to find foreigners. So they go and ask their mate, where's the foreign coaches? Right? So like,
go to the bar. Go to the bar.
So I left my last job, and you know, they asked me, have you got someone you want to recommend? And when I kind of said, well, you know, my mate's in China at the moment, obviously, it's when the border was closed. They're already in jobs. It was like, oh, okay. And then they were almost at a loss what to do next. Like, who they were going down their contact list. Like, right, who else might know some foreigners?
Okay, what now?
So like, who else should we ask if they know some foreigners that can coach? So like, if you can know some useful people, the same with teachers, exactly the same teachers.
I used to have headmistresses messaging me. I've only met once. I went to like look at some staff who were coaching at a school, and the next thing, the messenger me, "Oh, Matt, can you get us a science teacher and a music teacher?" Not right now, you know. Yeah. If you give me a bit of notice, I can find some. And just as David said, it's exactly that.
It's almost crazy when you talk about it like it, but it, you know, it genuinely is like that. You know, it's who you know, but maybe in back home, people complain about it's who you know and you can't get something. Whereas maybe here, it's more about it's who you know and they're going to give you 2 jobs a month when you're looking.
So you said you're going to find the foreigners at the bar. social life in China. What are you able to do for fun? Are you able to make friends? I'm sure, particularly in the bigger, more well-known cities, there's a large expat community where you'd be able to find a lot of people where you have a lot of similar interests from. So what's it like? Is it easy to enjoy yourself after work, or do you go straight back to the apartment and plan your sessions?
No, there's plenty. In the big city, there's obviously plenty going on that you can just go out and do, you know, whatever you want to do is available. In the same way that is in England. And in the big cities, you'll find even a lot of the local population speak very good or at least passable English. So you turn up and you can't speak any Chinese. You can still make friends with local people that will then obviously open up many more good places to go and to hang out with. But yeah, there are then the expat communities as well. You know, in Beijing, there's, you know, a 3-division football league, mostly made up of expat teams. So yeah, if you can play football, then you've got some, you know, an option to go and play there, 5-a-side, 11-a-side. In some of the smaller cities, it's almost easier to make friends because there are 2 or 3 places to go, which, you know, are very foreign friendly, and therefore everyone will go there, as in it serves a burger, it serves pizza with a menu which is translated. So you then quickly find people that have been in that city for a long time and they can tell you everything. And you know, people were very I find in Zhengzhou, which is, you know, off the beaten track, people were very friendly and, you know, very curious to get to know you and then want to tell you about what was going on and include you in things because there was that community feel within the expat group, whereas Beijing, there's many communities and maybe they're then not so keen to pull you into the communities, but you need to search them out and join the communities. So plenty going on.
Massively. And Will, you know, I don't know what it's like for you in England, but I'm from a small town and a smaller city close by, Lincoln. But, you know, when you watch some TV series and people who live in London, maybe they're a lawyer, they've got this high life, high power job and lifestyle. They go out every weekday. They've always got something. They're doing yoga in the morning and a bit of Tai Chi or a cake and tea at lunchtime or whatever. You can actually have this, obviously, in the bigger cities, in Shanghai, let's say, for example, where for some reason you feel like you have more time. And it might be because there's more things to do or the fact that life is, yeah, look, it's stressful with a lot of people around you and stupid things what happen to you daily, but you're not played down with politics, what you actually understand. There's a lot of politics, but you don't understand it. You can be naive to it. With stupid bills, with things being shoved down in your neck, what you don't need. With kind of everyone being depressed about this and that and complaining and negative, you can go and like David said, there's plenty of stuff to do, especially if you can play football, but you can go and you might join a martial arts club class, badminton group, ultra runners, hiking, cycling. You may want to go to nightclubs, bars, coffee shops, museums. They've got everything you need, concerts. They've got a lot of thing going on. Like there's not one day what goes past in a week where there isn't something going on and you could be doing something. So the option is there. I went to my first art exhibition and bought some paintings when I was out there. It was the first time I've done that. And you could literally do things like that if you want to. You can go and do pottery. You can go and do, Dave, what was it? Calligraphy when you write characters. Yeah. Tai Chi, Kung Fu. You can join a gym. And the camaraderie when the locals embrace you and you mix your friendship groups. Look, if you're a male and you like females, there's a lot of women out there who are available. If you're a female and you like males, I think there's something like five guys to one female in China. That could be, it sounds like Nottingham in my days, but it was never like that. But yeah, five males to one female. If you're a guy and you like males, okay, there's also big gay scenes there. Same with if you're a female and you like females. There's a big gay lesbian scene out there. Sorry, look, I don't know all the correct terms. I've been out of the loop from the UK a lot, but there is the social groups is everything, more of and plenty of, to keep yourself busy and not only create your own career, like I mentioned, but create your own life and still reinvent yourself as well. And do things you want to do with freedom, okay? Yes, China is China. They have rules. For most of the time, the rules are for things what don't really need rules. And the things what need rules, you can walk around with a can of beer. You can go to a nice restaurant. You can go to a cheap restaurant on the roadside. You can drink a 50p can of lager, what tastes good, with Chinese friends in the 7-Eleven at a shop. You can have 10 bottles, get drunk. Urinate all over the pathway. Some people even have a shit in some under a tree or something. Okay, and just carry on. It's okay. So
you go back on the negatives. There, there's one of the big negatives. I guess,
yeah, is that a positive?
You see that on the streets enough times when
that's a negative. Yeah, during
the holidays.
To know that you can fertilize trees like that just out in the open.
Yes. Yeah. It's very free. It's very free. When you're there.
This is something that I wanted to ask later, but I'll ask now about the typical day. So you say it feels like you've got more time. Now, I haven't been in Singapore recently and seeing just how well organized the public transport is and just life in general. Getting around was easy. It was cheap. And now in Southampton, every bloody day, I'm stuck at a red light waiting for another red light. And I think down here we have the highest traffic light per capita in the country.
What fact is that?
I hope it's on the city sign. Welcome to Southampton.
I'm stuck at traffic lights so often I actually have time to get my phone out and Google this stuff. It's that bad, and it feels like life is just being sucked out of me. So an hour or hour and a half training session ends up taking all night because you just can't get around easily. And then where we're such a car dependent society over here as well, it cost me about 50p in petrol just to get to the end of the driveway. So with our awful and expensive public transport and our ever increasing cost of running a car, it just feels like the last couple of years that people are not just stuck in their own town, but almost stuck in their own home. You know, can't afford to go out, can't afford to do this, that, or the other because cost of living is going up so much. And being in Singapore, it just seemed like life was very easy and very seamless, costing you, 50p on a train to get anywhere in the entire city and to get there quickly and safely. And so, you could do the yoga classes. You could meet up with your friends after work. You could go to the gym. You could also play five-a-side. And I think here, you've got to pick one of those a week.
Yeah.
So, what's a typical day like? Is it easy to get around? Are you able to, as you talked about, there are opportunities for a social life. Does it fit in well with your schedule?
The thing that Chinese people complain to me about when they've been to the UK is they say everything kind of closes very early and things wrap up early in the evening. So as football coaches, the evening time is normally eaten up by doing training sessions, but the advantage of China is kind of even in the smaller cities, this isn't because I'm living in Beijing or, I was in Shanghai. Things stay open quite late. People will be out socializing later into the evening, and not necessarily with alcohol, maybe just over food with their friends, or they're just out in the street when the weather's slightly better, or if you're further south, it's never really that cold, so you can just go to the park and meet up with your friends, or you go to a coffee shop, or a dessert bar. I think they're quite popular in Asia, these new fad things where you can go and just have a cake in the evening instead of having a beer. There's plenty of that, so even though I finish at 8 p.m. most nights, I can finish my session, tidy up, I jump on the subway, and often I can go out and meet up with different groups of friends which aren't football coaches, and still have an evening with them, and then go home. It's no real drain on the social life in the same way that it can be if you're working late, and by the time you get home, this last order's in the pub, and all your mates are already going home. It's not really the case here.
Yeah, it feels like time is being drained away from you, and it almost feels like actually doing anything social for yourself becomes a chore here. Whereas maybe it's because I was on holiday, but it didn't feel that way in Singapore. It didn't feel that way in Dubai. Just observing other people actually looked like relaxing was relaxing. I think here we've got to put effort into relaxing. So Matt, I'm conscious that you've got to go very soon. So let me ask couple of really important questions, and David, if you're all right to give us another 5 to 10 minutes afterwards, just to go through one or two more, if you don't mind, because I know you're both being generous with your time, but you're also giving such great information. It's going to benefit a lot of people. So, what people would want to know is, this all sounds great. Now I want to get to China. How are you two able to help with that?
Well, what David and I are trying to do now is help support people who are firstly and most importantly interested in going across to China. That now I'll be very direct now. I haven't got time, and David certainly hasn't got time for people who are like, oh, we want to try, give it a go and see how it is. No, sorry. We want to help people who need to move. Either they can't get a job back home, they're desperate, they've been trying to get work and still can't, they need to support a family, they just need something, or they actually legitimately want to have a new challenge with a different culture. David and I will be open to talk to discuss. They would have to get over there on their own back. We would help support them with, opinions, suggestions for flights, airports, locations, depending on their needs and their wants, or their kind of vision. And then once there, look, we will support them any way we can to try and get them a job. We will have contacts and jobs already kind of positions needing to be filled. So yes, there is a risk. We're not going to take responsibility if you don't get a job, because it's very easy to get a job, but they need to be flexible, they need to be willing. And look, we can try and place them into a role, and once they're placed, obviously they've got to do a good job, but we can help look after them, make sure the contract's legit, or the salary and everything, and they're not going to get cheated or scammed, at least not scammed as much as they would with ours.
Yeah, that's a big statement. You can't protect against all Chinese
Yeah, 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 yeah.
scams.
You might get scammed, but not as much. But yeah, we just want to be there as a sounding board, as support, and obviously do our best to try and place people as well, using our contacts. I'll be going across to see David as much as I can now. Now the travel's opened a lot more freely. And David's always got his ear to the ground, and between us, yeah, we just want to support people in need. Sorry, on that point.
Yeah.
So if there is anyone listening, contact me, matt@mattwardconsulting.com. That's matt@mattwardconsulting.com. There's nothing on the website yet, because I keep coming in and out of different things I'm doing with myself and the website. So throw give Will. Will, they can contact you. They can even contact David if you know David, but email myself if they're interested as well.
All right. Well, Matt, we better say goodbye to you and thank you for coming on. It's been absolutely fantastic, and you definitely sold it to me. Considering.
Will, very welcome, and thank you for having me. And literally, if I needed to financially or to build a football coaching career, I forgot to mention, David mentioned it, and Will, you did about the US as well. You get exposure to actually coaching and being in difficult situations. Okay, look, it might be a ball like doing six classes a day. Repetitive, you might not start pushing out the quality, but you're being exposed to that. You can try different things, you can tune different things to when you are coaching lesser, you can then really push out a quality session because you've gone through so many, you trial and errored so many. Just like when you teach out here in Taiwan, a PE teacher, I can do a PE class now of quite a good standard because I used to do 7 or 8 periods a day some weeks. Which grinds you down, but you know how to put something on, you know how to deal with something, what you're not expecting. Oh, I've only got 4 balls and 12 people have turned up. They said it was only going to be 6 people. Yeah, the problems that every coach gets, even at professional level. So yeah, it is actually very good in that respect. And if I needed financial support or financial starting over again, whatever the word is, or career direction, or just something to do to get me started or to keep me busy whilst I'm looking for other ways, I will go to China for sure. Yes, look, I don't want to live in China. That's why I'm living in Taiwan. Right now, it's not for me. There's a lot of downside to it. David's been out there for many years now, so a lot of other people. It has its downsides. It's not for everyone, but that's where I would go if I was in need of these things, what I mentioned. Dave. Good, Davey, good to catch up, mate, again. See you very soon in person, I hope. And Will, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for giving me time. Lovely to see you.
Cheers, Matt. Chat soon.
David, if you've got just a couple of extra minutes, I want to ask you one.
Yeah, you've left me all the negatives, I think, haven't you? Is Matt signs off and says there's some negatives of living on the mainland, and now I am left to answer them.
Yeah, if you don't mind, your top 10 worst things about China, please.
Yeah, so we'll get the knock at the door.
Oh, there's one. All right. Let's go. What's something, looking back, that you wish you'd known before going to China?
I guess that's a question that you throw out with the idea of some negative experience. I guess, actually, would be that it's not really that different. I remember when I first came out here, a lot of people saying to me, oh, what are you going to do if X happens in China? Or, you know, what are you going to do? You don't know anyone in China. It's like, well, actually, just kind of go out and see. And then when I was first out here, it's actually quite normal. In terms of what I actually would have liked to know is to understand a lot more about the way people are and the culture, because that does impact a lot on how things are done. You often hear Chinese people talk about, you know, 5,000 years of culture. The government is becoming increasingly proud of China, maybe pro-China, whereas before maybe they were a little bit more interested in outside ideas. They're now promoting a lot more of their own ideas at the political level. So understanding that culture and the way that people then perceive China and its history and the interactions between people then explains some of the things which, as a foreigner at first, you end up getting crazy about, or you're like, well, why is it like this? Why can it not be how I want it to be? You actually understand more why it is like that when you start to understand that a little bit more, and you have that open mind. And the coaches, you mentioned earlier about a coach that turned up and a couple of days later left. I had a similar experience a few years ago with another coach that did that, and they just couldn't get their head around the culture. If you can be open-minded to that, to trying to learn and then understand, then you're in a much better position.
that's why I think doing things like this helps, because it gets the word out there and helps to pull down the curtain and give people a real insight into what Cut is like, and providing that we can get these kind of episodes out to enough people, that hopefully that people will be a bit more well-informed and so won't feel so far out of their comfort zone. But like you've just said, it's a similar thing I'm getting from so many people I talk to who've worked in different countries, is it's not as different as you think. And it's a recurring theme everywhere you go, that people drive cars and cats and dogs don't like each other. The sky is blue, the grass is green. And you realize that the difference is actually quite small, and you're going to be fine. It will take obviously a few things to adapt to, but you're going to be fine. And definitely where China is a place where I think there's not any misinformation and misconceptions, but it's also somewhere where most people's interactions with anything Chinese in this country is maybe the Chinese meet at school or the Chinese restaurant down the road that they go to every few weeks for takeaways. And so it's a huge country with lots of history and with lots of different cultures. Like you're talking about the different ethnicities and different provinces. And yet I think the perception is that every country is just homogenous. They're all one people. Whereas you think of how diverse we are here in the UK. A lot of countries are also really, really diverse, but you think of, you're almost conditioned to think of every country where there's one standout person and the rest of them are all just kind of deviations of that one same guy. And maybe the haircut and the shoes change, but it's all the same person. And I think we do a really bad job in this country of educating about different countries. So this, I believe, would really, really help. And I hope enough people are listening to them and watching them that actually we do get the word out there, because people like yourself who've been there and done it provide such valuable insight into this. And so can't thank you enough for that. Let's just ask two questions on the football itself, and then I will let you go and enjoy your excellent Chinese social life.
Exactly. It's still early for us. 8:30 p.m. That's all right. It's just getting started.
All right. So I know that football has been widely supported by the government, and they see it as a way of maybe gaining some soft power by having some influence in the football world. And talking the other day about how often would you think about the country of Argentina if you weren't a football fan? And potentially China's looking for some clout in that. So what's it like? Matt said about the games being on TV. You got a professional league. Is football big? Are there a lot of fans? Do they all support Man United?
Man United is well supported. When it comes to the Premier League teams, is quite well supported. The football culture, I would say, is developing, mostly because the way that the government has put in all this money. You see some of it in the professional level with the crazy signings and the crazy salaries they've paid out to some players, which has helped build some greater fan culture. But actually, most of it's been spent in schools and trying to get more young people actually playing. So you can see a lot more kids in that primary school, the kind of age group, and now moving towards middle school age group, that have grown up playing football regularly as part of their school day. So this new policy is kind of end of 2014, start of 2015. So if the kids are in high school now, they probably didn't grow up playing so much football. But these younger ones have been playing a lot. Does that transfer so much into, you know, do they watch lots of football? The World Cup wasn't it a great time for us out here? So we were trying to encourage the kids to watch some, but you know, they weren't turning up and trying to recreate the goals, which, you know, I'm used to being back home. You have the kids that really, they know every fact about the players. Maybe they don't embrace football in that sense, but or at least not in the younger age groups. But they do love playing. And you see a lot of kids now that are quite skillful and play a lot of football and are keen to play more football and are pushing back slightly against the parents when they come and say, sorry, you can't play football because you've got more homework now. or you know, your science grade only put you in the top 20% of the class. You need to be in the top 10% of the class, so you're going to drop football and do science. There's a pushback against that from the kids now, who really want to play football, rather than, okay, football is one of the activities that I do alongside other things. So the Super League doesn't help itself by not allowing fans for the last three seasons now. And not helping yourself if your club, if you were, you know, living in Nanjing and your team won the championship and then next season they decide not to play. So, on that side of things, there's still a lot of work to be done. But hopefully as the kids, you know, and if that's where you'll end up working, then they are keen for football. They want to play football. They want to learn more about football, and they're empty vessels in some senses to really give them that knowledge and teach them to love football, not just play football.
What is the infrastructure like then for football? Because if I'm talking to you two today, it sounds like school sport is quite a big one. And it sounds like and there's a decent amount of private academies, a good grassroots scene, and that also the professional teams have got academies, which in some countries, funny enough, they're almost like standalone teams without a youth department. So, what's it like? Is it lots of astroturf, lots of grass? Is it 5v5? Did it get to 11v11 quickly? How does it all work? Give us an overview.
Yeah, so there's a lot of money spent on facilities. In general, the government's trying to encourage people to be more healthy and more active. So they are building more, you know, running tracks and football pitches, and Frisbee suddenly become incredibly popular, something to do with the Chinese version of TikTok. Everyone started playing Frisbee last summer. So in general, there's a lot more effort to get people outside into parks and playing stuff. And then you find most grassroots clubs have their own facility. So like my club's got two 8-a-side pitches, which we use, you know, for our training. We don't have the oldest team, so we don't worry about 11v11. But behind us on the pit, on the next pitch over, is an 11v11, and there's another club there, which has like a first team that play like recreation football. So, and that's not uncommon, right? A lot of parks will have that, and they'll have clubs that use that. And then that's excluding the schools, right? The schools then have their own track they use for their, you know, marching practice, and then also the football pitch, which they use for their marching practice, and then sometimes for their football. So facilities is one thing that you're not short of in China. It really is good facilities to play on. It's not a bumpy field in the dark. Yeah, there's nice astro pitches everywhere for each club to use.
Do you get a lot of dad coaches, or are they mostly employed?
Almost all coaches are employed. So a lot of the local coaches will be PE teachers, or would have played some form of football, or you know, they're into sport. I don't know if that's partly because of the cultural difference. A lot of these parents, say the parents are 30, 40 years old, they grew up in a time where there was only academic pressure. Especially if they're not from one of the major cities, that the parents would have been pushing them to get out of the place they were in so they could get a good job and then move to another city. And then in some places, a lot of the parents are away then working. So if you're talking about a smaller city, maybe there aren't so many parents around. The concept of, you know, a dad helping out his son's team is less common, although some of the dads like to pay you to coach their children and then spend a lot of time shouting on the sideline and coaching the children. Almost all the coaches you would say are, you know, paid coaches, professional coaches, in that sense. How professional you want to call them based on their license and the way they coach is a different matter.
Do you think that has raised the level, or is it creating other problems?
I think there's been a lot of effort into coach education. A lot more people trying to be involved in sport, but it's a cultural thing, right? Maybe some parents are keen to help their children's team, whereas a coach is working because he's getting paid for it or because he's the PE teacher and he has to take the team. So I guess there's some positives and negatives on that side of things for how the coaches actually work with the kids.
I could spend all day asking you questions. Both of you have really sold China and painted a good picture, but also been quite realistic and quite candid with it, which is very, very useful. So even if no one else listened to this, I know that I've got a lot of good information for my own potential career opportunities going forward. So thank you, and thank you to Matt, who's already gone, but thank you, David, very, very much for giving up your time, and thank you for giving up this information and speaking with us today.
No, my pleasure. Hopefully more people see China is an opportunity. So hopefully people come and fill the jobs because it's going to be a lot going in this post-COVID China. So it's certainly an interesting time here to see kind of how we move from this control era to the back to reopening and taking on the sporting mantle.
I will be watching with envy, I'm sure.
Hopefully from up close in Shanghai.
Yeah, in a few years, eventually that will happen. We hope you found that to be thoroughly enjoyable. Reach out to Matt and David directly, who can help assist with the job search in China. We've already had a few China jobs on the board in recent months, and there will be more coming soon. And make sure your BFCM membership is up to date, so that you can be alerted regarding the latest coaching jobs around the world. And don't forget that there is now a BFCM app which allows you to browse jobs, read articles, connect with coaches, and listen to interviews all in one convenient place. We'll see you next time.